Good morning. As they mentioned, my name is Austin. I'm a former teaching pastor down the road at EV Free Fullerton. Serve as an executive director for a church in Santa Monica currently, and I've just been a longtime friend of Southland's church. And so this morning, it really is an honor to be here with you this morning. Today, they've invited me to talk just briefly about finding joy in singleness. I think the team may have asked me to speak on this because I'm kind of the token single, never married, no kids pastor in the area. Either way, as we talk about finding more joy in singleness, I won't be giving you my take or my perspective on it. Instead, I want to look at Paul's take and Paul's perspective on it. And so this morning, we're going to be in the book of Corinthians. In 1 Corinthians, Paul is writing a letter to the church, and it sounds as if he's responding to a letter the Corinthian church had previously written to him. At several moments in the letter, he'll say, now concerning this, or now concerning that, or now concerning this. And in this section, he's responding to what looks like what the Corinthian church had were some questions about marriage and singleness. And so this morning, we're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. So if you have your digital Bible, you can turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. If you have your analog Bible, you can turn there as well. And I'm going to have three brief points to make about finding more joy in singleness as Paul talks about it. However, before we begin, I just want to set a few parameters for the talk this morning. First, this talk on singleness is not to be confused with an apologetic to make singleness as over and against and better than marriage. In fact, I'm very much a proponent of getting married early and having kids often. This is not a talk about the concept of celibacy, which is a gift that some people have or a vow that some people take to better serve the church. I'm also not a singles pastor. I'm also not here to promote you to consider thinking about a life or a vow of celibacy. This is what the talk is. This talk is about singleness because every single person in this room will experience a season of singleness before they get married. For those of you that are married, the majority of you will experience a season of singleness after your marriage, either because your spouse has passed away or, God forbid, there's a dissolution of a marriage. And when the Bible talks about singleness and it talks about the resurrection, it talks about a reality of singleness for all of God's people. This is also coming from a pastor that is not celibate, meaning I desire marriage and I desire kids. And so I'm not here to say, it's easy, just be like me. Everyone in here is going to experience singleness before marriage. Most of us will experience singleness after marriage, and all of us again will experience singleness in the resurrection. And so we're gonna look at the joy of singleness as three things. One, a pre-marriage season of serenity. Two, a post-marriage season of serving. And three, a prophetic and eschatological signpost of the resurrection and the life of the world to come. So singleness as a pre-marriage season of serenity, a post-marriage season of serving, and a prophetic eschatological signpost of the resurrection and the life of the world to come. Now, I want to start with this. I grew up on a sitcom on TV called Seinfeld. Some of you will know about Seinfeld, and one of my favorite episodes was titled Serenity Now. And it was this episode in which George's dad, Frank, he finds out he has high blood pressure. And he's a little bit angsty and kind of loses his temper. And so he gets this advice that anytime his blood pressure is rising and he's feeling angsty, he should say out loud, "Serenity now!" And so throughout the whole episode, he's in a car in traffic. he's with his family around a dinner table, or he's standing in line and he feels his blood pressure rising. He feels himself getting angsty and he shouts in public, "Serenity now." And the idea for Frank is that he'll remember that he can have a sense of peace even in the midst of difficulty. When Paul writes about singleness, he wants to make a similar point about singleness. And so this is point number one. The joy of singleness pre-marriage is in fact a season of peace and serenity. This is 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 25 to 28. And this is Paul kind of responding to some questions the Corinthian church had. He said, "Now concerning the virgins," some translations say the betrothed. The idea here is that Paul is, he's referring to a group of people that are not yet married. "Now concerning those that are not yet married, I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one who by the grace of God, by the mercy of God, is trustworthy," or by one who has been faithful. Verse 26, he says, "I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is." Why? Verse 28a. "Because those who marry will have worldly troubles," and watch this gesture of mercy Paul wants to give to the church. "And I want to spare you the trouble." Paul wants the church to note that there is, in fact, trouble that comes with marriage. Now, when we define trouble, the American Dictionary talks about trouble being mental worry, physical pain, personal inconvenience, or simply annoyance. When we talk about it in Strong's Dictionary, which is a theological dictionary, it carries this weight of oppression, affliction, persecution. Theologically, when the New Testament uses this word, it's most often talking about the trouble that the church will face simply because they are Christian. They are Christians living in a pagan world. And so anytime the New Testament's talking about it, it's talking about this persecution the church is going to face simply because they're Christian. And here's the reality 2,000 years later. In this world, as Jesus said, you will have trouble simply because you are Christian. You will have trouble at work simply because you are Christian. You will have trouble in school simply because you are Christian. You will have trouble in your neighborhood simply because you are Christian. And that is because Christianity and the world are in direct opposition to one another. And so Paul's reminding the church, you're going to have plenty of trouble in this world simply being Christian. So if you want more trouble, go ahead and get married. In other words, we're all drinking from a single cup of trouble. And Paul says, if you want double trouble, there's marriage for you. So I want to encourage you this morning. If you're in a season of life pre-marriage in which you're single, take moments to recognize the season of peace that you have because you are single. And in fact, in those moments in which you might be sitting in your apartment alone and a little bit angsty, kind of wishing you were married with kids, etc., you can take a moment and say, Lord, I wish for that, but thank you for the season of peace that I have now. Thank you for the serenity now that you've given me. So here's the first point. The joy of singleness pre-marriage is in fact a season of serenity and a season of peace. Be thankful for it. Lean into that. Appreciate that until you get married. Here's point number two. Be joyful in your singleness. Get more joy in your singleness post-marriage by recognizing that it is a season of serving. This is 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 8. Paul says, "Now to the widowers and to the widows," i.e. those that are on the other side of marriage, but this side of the resurrection, he says, "I say that it is good for them to remain single just as I am." Paul wants to note to the church that those that are on the other side of marriage, that are now widowers and widows, their status in life is still good. And the idea of good isn't, it's just okay, or it just barely meets the standard, or you've taken a step back, but you'll be all right. When the dictionary defines good, it talks about it as an excellent thing. Right, proper, a valuable, virtuous, beautiful stage of life. Theologically, that word good kind of carries this connotation of wonderful. I love Barbara when she was talking about the creation account. God makes all of these things, and every single time he doesn't say, it's good enough. He says, no, it's good, it's good, it's good. And Paul here talks about the life post-marriage as good. For Paul, there was an entire chapter waiting to be written in the life of people that were post-marriage. We think about stories, and we think about there's two kinds of stories. There are good stories and there are bad stories. Bad stories don't have a plot worth watching, but good stories have a plot worth watching. A bad story doesn't have action that is virtuous, but a good story has action that is virtuous. A bad story has a dull culmination. A good story has an exciting culmination. A bad story has the protagonist just kind of fade off into the sunset and fail, but a good story has the triumph of the protagonist. And Paul thinks that those that are post-marriage ought to continue to write a good story, a new chapter in their life with an interesting plot, virtuous action, exciting turns, success, and new resolutions. In fact, when Paul talks about this life of singleness and the beautiful, good story that can be written, he writes about in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 13 and verse 10. This starts with verse 13. He says, the problem with widowers and widows is that they get into the habit of being idle. They go about from house to house, and not only they become idlers, and also they become busybodies who talk and text nonsense to one another. They say things they ought not to say. Verse 10, instead, widowers and widows, they ought to be known for their good deeds, such as bringing up children. That idea in the New Testament is biological children, it's foster children, it's spiritual children. Showing hospitality to God's people, inviting them into your home, washing the feet of the Lord's people, helping those in trouble, and devoting themselves to all kinds of good works. Paul in Titus chapter 2, verse 4, talking specifically to women, talks again about this new kind of story they can write. This is Titus chapter 2, verse 4. It says, older women should urge the younger women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home, to be kind, and to be subject to their husbands, so that no one will malign the word of God. This passage rings true for men as well. If we were to remix this passage for men, the same would be true for widowers. The older men should urge the younger men, love your wives and children. Be self-controlled and pure. Be busy at work. Be kind. Love your wives so that no one will malign the word of God. Here's the idea Paul is trying to make. Is that theoretically, at the end of your life, or simply post-marriage, but on this side of the resurrection, you have more space in your life. You have more bandwidth. You have more time. You have more resources. You have the opportunity to say, man, I was in one men's group, but now I'm being one men's group, and I'm gonna start a second men's group and mentor double the amount of men. Or for women, I was in one women's ministry gathering, but I'm gonna start another one and mentor and disciple women. In other words, Paul wants those that are on the post side of marriage to leverage their time, their resources, and their wisdom to get in the business of being distracted making disciples. Get distracted teaching God's people more than you were able to before. Get distracted hosting more people in your home because you have the space. Get distracted mentoring and discipling those that are younger than you. And so this can be your prayer if you're post-marriage looking for more joy. God, help me to serve God's people well. Help me to leverage my newfound time and resources and space to serve God's people. And I think when you do that, you will find more joy in that post-marriage season of singleness. So if you're in that post-marriage season of singleness, are you using your time wisely? Are you simply going house to house, coffee shop, to golf course? Or are you using that time to be distracted making disciples? That's point number two. Be joyful in your post-marriage season of life by making it a season of serving. And here's the final point, point number three. Be joyful in the reality that your singleness pre-marriage and post-marriage is a prophetic eschatological signpost pointing to the resurrection and the life of the world to come. This is 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 29 to 35. Paul again says, I want you to be free from anxieties. Watch this. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. But the married man, rightfully so, is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife. And rightly so, his interests are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord as well, how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married woman is anxious about worldly things and rightfully so, how to please her husband. Verse 35, I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure, watch this, your undivided devotion to the Lord. And he summarizes it like this in verse 29. This is what I mean, brothers and sisters. The appointed time has grown very short, for the present form of this world is passing away along with its institutions. This idea of passing by is literally to pass along, to be here one moment and gone the next, to disappear, if you will. Reminds me of evenings I spend on my front patio with my dog, a golden retriever named George Washington. We sit on the patio, and there's a few fixed structures on Birch Street there where I live. There's, you know, a house across the street that's not going anywhere. There's a parking structure right down the road and several restaurants as well. George and I sit there on the patio and we see these permanent fixed structures, and then we see cars just pass by one after another, zipping through here one moment, gone the next. Paul is making a similar point about singleness. He's saying there's something to the reality of the permanent state of our lives is singleness. Now, marriage is a phenomenal, good, wonderful institution that I highly promote and I would love to participate in one day. But the reality is that on the other side, in the resurrection, in the life of the world to come, Jesus says this. This is Matthew chapter 22, verse 30. For in the resurrection, God's people will neither marry nor will they be given in marriage, but they will be like angels in heaven. In other words, marriage is a godly, culture-building institution, but it is temporary for this side of the resurrection. In the resurrection, in the life of the world to come, God's people are single. And so for Paul and Jesus, singleness is kind of peak living. It's kind of, this is what the future looks like. When the new heavens and the new earth come, this is what God's people look like. They look single. And so there's an element in your singleness. You can find joy in realizing and recognizing that you point to a reality to come. Not only were you single pre-marriage, and many of you will be single post-marriage, but all of us will be single in the resurrection. And so if you, as a single person, if you can't find joy on this side of resurrection, you're not gonna like the other side very much. And so I want to encourage you in prayer times, and as you might feel a little angsty about wanting to be married or having lost a spouse, you get to remember that you are a signpost that God is using for the resurrection and the life of the world to come. So live out that metaphor. Be that signpost. Allow your singleness to be filled with joy. And so just to recap, there is much joy to be found in being single. If you are single, pre-marriage, find the joy of the extra dose of serenity and peace that you have. If you're single post-marriage, lean into serving God's people. And for all of us that are single pre-marriage and post-marriage, simply recognize that we are a prophetic, eschatological signpost pointing to the resurrection and the life of the world to come. Amen.